The following episode may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Today's show is sponsored by Blue Durango Iced Tea and the Atlanta Coffee Supply Group, Atlanta's premier full-service distributor of hand-roasted coffee and premium iced tea, brewing equipment and supplies for the hospitality and food service industry. You've been hearing me talk about Lake House Coffee for weeks now in these sponsored reads, and while I'm drinking it during the show, they also make Blue Durango Iced Tea. Did you listen to the July 17th episode I did with Jonathan Silverman? We drank that iced tea. It was awesome. As I said before, you might already be enjoying these products. Do you go to places like Wahoo, South City Kitchen, Gusto, and Dantana's? Dude, Gusto, I just interviewed that guy. That's going to be great. If you're a proprietor in the restaurant or food service industry, reach out to them right now. Tell them I sent you. Say, hey, I want to start carrying Lake House Coffee and Blue Durango Iced Tea because they're great products and it's a local freaking brand. Tell them the Atlanta Podcast sent you. Hey, and if you're just a regular person, you can order this stuff. My friend Steven ordered a bunch of coffee from the website. Go to lakehousecoffee.com and check it out and learn more about them. That's lakehousecoffee.com. Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis, enjoying delicious afternoon dunks on a Friday. It's a holiday weekend if you're listening to this on the weekend in which it was recorded. Today is August the 31st. Tomorrow is September 1st. It's Dragon Con weekend. Now, I think I told you I'm going to be bringing you a bunch of stuff, and that may not happen. Last year, my Virgin trip down there, I went down a bunch. I caught a bunch of stuff. Real talk, Stacy was not working back then, so I could just... Bye. Peace. I'm going to go record a bunch of stuff. So the wife's working. It's much more difficult for me to get away for large swaths of time like that. So we'll see what I get. We'll see what ends up happening this weekend. I do plan on going down there, but we'll see what we end up getting. Just giving you a heads up, I know I said I was definitely getting you some. I even had a thing this morning that I couldn't get to. Let's talk about what I did go to. I attended something called House of Genius, which if you follow me on social... which you, by the way, should, Atlanta Podcast, sorry, ATL Podcast on Instagram. Go add that to your phone right now. I'll wait. House of Genius is an amazing collaborative community, say that three times fast, of business owners and people looking for feedback on their business ideas. Look them up, House of Genius, or just DM me and I'll tell you more. But they had a gathering that I went to, and who was there but our old buddy Ryan Gravel. Ryan Gravel, one of the most popular episodes we've ever had. If you've not listened to that, go way, way back. It's been over a year, but it was episode number 3. I'm not really big on the numbers thing, as you know, but I know that was the 3rd episode. Anyhow, we're into him, and I'm trying to get him to sit down again. He agreed. He said he would like to, but he's super, super busy. So hopefully we can make that happen for you. On today's program, Kate Atwood and Choose ATL and the Atlanta Metro Chamber. Now, Kate was recommended by Nick of King of Pops, but I believe her name has come up a couple of other times as well. I went down to their fancy offices downtown, as you will hear, and we had a really great chat about what they are all about, how they're bringing the best talent to Atlanta. I think it's a very ATL podcast kind of a chat, and I hope you enjoy it. Without further ado, Kate and I, from just a few weeks ago, away we go.
I will say the two things I did see in you, you were seated. That's why I was surprised that you were over 6 feet tall. Yeah. Were you an athlete?
I play basketball.
You do, you said currently.
I did. No, I haven't.
I mean, I didn't want to ask that question because that's such an obvious lame question.
Actually, the funny question. Story about my height is I was pretty average growing up. Basketball was still my sport, but, you know, up until about my sophomore year in high school, I was like this very quick, like, shooting guard.
Okay.
And then
so you weren't like...
Summer, no, and then in one summer, I grew 4 inches.
And they were like, you're the center.
Yeah. And I was like, just slangly and awkward and no muscle, you know. So I got crushed when they moved me to the forward and center position. And it kind of, all my hoop dreams kind of went away.
Where did
that growth spurt.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Good old Seaville.
Good old Seaville.
Okay.
Which, before before a year ago, many people didn't even really know where Charlottesville was.
Right.
And then
there's a university there, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I went to UVA.
Okay.
And graduated and was down here within 90 days to work for the Peach Bowl, be an intern for the what's now the Chick-fil-A Bowl.
Right.
So sports was my big thing.
Because the Peach Bowl was a dumb name.
Well, all those bowls were named, like Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl, they were all named.
I know, but because we're Georgia and it was Peach, but it just, it felt, I mean, honestly, interestingly enough, now that we're like, obviously what we're talking about, it feels very old Atlanta, right? Like, oh, we're not the Orange or the Sugar Bowl, but we're the Peach Bowl because yeah, we're Atlanta. Yeah. So.
Well, now all those bowl games are named after title sponsors.
Right. So it's a gazillion-dollar business. Gazillion-dollar. Yeah. College athletics is beyond. But it's one of the reasons why I get very down on us folks sometimes because... You want to spit out your gum?
Yep.
Go ahead. You're trying to be subtle about it. It's totally okay. It's just me, you, and the podcast. Yeah. Just me, you, and several hundred to thousand Atlanta listeners today anyway. Is that we have many, many Georgia Bulldog fans who aren't Falcon fans, and that always upset me very much. Because I want you to support our team. Now, we got really good the last couple years, so that kind of has shifted a little. But people are like this dyed-in-the-wool, like, college football fans. Yeah. And meanwhile, we have this pro team to support. And I would go to pro games, and, like, half the stadium was, like, Saints fans. And that hurt me.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's something about college athletics that I think it's really hard to replicate in any professional league, you know. And that is just that... You know, the camaraderie that's around it, you know that, well, or there's not supposed to be money driving it. I know. But, I think that there's so much pride around, like, schools and universities. You can look at Atlanta United, though, and I think that's...
Well, it's interesting because now, like, that's where everyone is.
Yeah.
But I have been quoted as saying, I'm not quite a believer yet.
Okay, why?
Well, first of all, I will say that I haven't been, and everybody's like, you got to go. Yeah. I will also say that people said that to me before the Grateful Dead as well, and going to the concert did not turn me into a Grateful Dead fan. But because it feels very new, shiny, hipster thing, and it's easy to like and want to go to that thing. So let's give it a couple years. Let's see if we're not as good, and let's see if those people are true fans and 70,000 people... go to the games. So I'm just not sold yet.
Well, I think you always have to be winning, but I think the unique thing about Atlanta United is that it invited, you know, there's only like a 4%, or maybe it's more like 6% overlap of Falcons season ticket holders and Atlanta United ticket holders. Now, one of those is price point, but it's also invited so many corners of the Atlanta region into a cultural experience event that's relevant to them that they've never really been invited into. I mean, football's like a pretty like American driven, you know, sport. And soccer, you're just seeing, I mean, you're really seeing how international Atlanta is.
Maybe I just hate soccer.
Look, I'll tell you this. I never enjoyed soccer before I went to a live game. I just found it was slow. I liked high scoring, you know. So, of course, it depends on what you like to get out of a live sporting event. But it really is like this amazingly fun, energetic.
That's what they've been telling me. And so I'm not going to just sit here like an old man and never, I don't even need to try it. I will try it. I will go. And I've had plans a couple times.
What's your favorite sport?
Well, football.
Football.
I'm an American, ma'am.
Yeah, yeah.
What's interesting is that as a kid, I played football, but I followed everything. And then the older I get, the less and less. Like, it used to be, okay, I'm only watching the basketball playoffs, the baseball playoffs, and then all the football season. And now I don't even watch the basketball playoffs or the baseball playoffs. I mean, unless we're involved. Like, now it's like it's just football. And even in the last few years, I've gone from, I'm going to watch... I had season tickets, and then I had a third kid, and you can't be gone all the time when you have three kids. Yeah. To, okay, well, I'll be home, but I'll watch Red Zone Channel, right? because what self-respecting person that watches football? And now I don't even, now it's just like I'll watch like the Sunday night game or whatever. I just feel like I just don't.
I know.
Sports are less and less time, whatever, to me. Like I used to be in like six fantasy leagues and now I'm in one maybe every year. Do you play fantasy?
Why do you think that is?
I guess it's what you can't say time because you find this time, right? I don't have time to work out. I don't have time to whatever, right? And I do exercise and I just think that's where my focus is. It's doing whatever my family's doing and my self-care. So exercising, that kind of thing.
No, I ask. I mean, I think it's a really interesting conversation that's happening around the sporting industry. And that, you know, again, because you have, you know, football, which has long been, you know, the whole, the, you know, kind of the big stakeholder of American sport. And their median age is, I don't know how old you are, but is, you know.
Take a stab. I won't be offended.
42? 46. 46. Well, right on the head. So 46, the average ticket holder for a NFL game is 46-year-old male. And then you look at the up and coming, like the soccer, and it's like a 24-year-old.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I think that when I had season tickets, you see people from all walks of life. And I feel like if I went to a soccer game, it would be a lot of people that I see like on the Beltline. Isn't that the Eastside Beltline? Is that not true?
Because it's on a podcast. Give me a little bit of margin. I don't have those data points in front of me. So I feel like people always come back to me like, no, it's not. It's like, so I'm not reading off of scriptive data points, but it's somewhere around there. The point being is that there's that huge gap in the generational preferences of sport,
well,
which is kind of interesting.
It's this whole, I mean, this is all great stuff for us to talk about because at 46, I don't know how old you are, but do you, sometimes you look at 18 or 20 year olds and you're like, they look like children to you. Like really, like you have kids?
I don't have kids.
Okay. So, a person who's a freshman in college still kind of has that like kid face that my kids have. It's a little bizarre, but my friend, so have you heard of November Project? They're one of these great, cool, like come work out with us for free. And maybe there's fellowship afterwards or whatever.
Oh, cool.
They're happening right now. You can look them up or look them up on Instagram or
why is it called November Project?
It's probably a fundraising situation. Anyway, my friend went to it. My friend Clayton, who's 36 and, less in shape than I am even. And he was like, oh my God, these people were all super young and super fit. And he felt a little out of place, but obviously he's going to go back and it's not that he's not welcome, but that kind of thing, I feel like didn't, when I was in my 20s, there's no like young hip fitness groups, right? There's no apps that told you where to go. And like, that's the thing now, right? Like there's this whole thing, which I just learned for events that, people would freak out if they didn't sell tickets, but now they know that, like, I just talked to the guy from Dad's Garage, they sell all their tickets like the night before. Like they sell out the night before or the night of. Whereas before in theater, you'd be sweating it.
Yeah.
But that's today's culture is what do you want to do? Swipe up. Here's this thing. Let's go do it.
Yeah.
So
it's good to be in Atlanta because we have a lot of things to do.
We have a lot of great things to do in Atlanta. But it's just fascinating to me how this is all going because, again, that's not. I mean, I'm sure there were people meeting in places besides the bars when I was young, but I don't know where it was.
Well, I definitely know, you know, because in what I do with Choose ATL, which is Choose ATL is the initiative really to position Atlanta favorably with millennials. Now you could say Gen Z. I just categorize it all as the newer generations. So because they look at things so differently, right? Like they're the first like real true digital era generation. They're making their decisions on where they live based on culture and subculture, not job security. That's one of the big differences.
Who needs that?
Yeah. Well, and it's just, you know, it's not really, they're not going to be afforded that, you know, you're not going to go work at a big enterprise for 30, 40 years. Like the boomers did. So all of that stuff is shifting, which is, I think, making the, like everybody's seeing that the dad's garages and the food culture and the gaming culture and like all these little subcultures, the street art culture, those are bubbling to the top because those are held up to a value. Whereas before it was more about the business and more about the, you know, the Coca-Cola brands and the Home Depot brands. And of course, I'm framing this all around Atlanta, but that's what every city is dealing
with
right now.
I mentioned the view before we turned on. Can you tell people where we are? I would like to give a nice visual picture.
Yeah, so we are in the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce headquarters, HQ. So we're in downtown, but we are the 34th floor of the 191 building, which is, if you're looking for kind of locations, right downtown next to the Ritz-Carlton downtown. But our office is a 360-degree overlook of Atlanta. So I'll take you, you know, over to the side.
The secret game room?
Yeah, where you can see the, you know, the ship, this the Mercedes-Benz ship, and like you have that whole view, and then of course you can look all the way down or uptown, and it's really kind of fun because I think before I really even took this job, I didn't realize how many trees Atlanta had. You know, I mean, we really are like the city that's in the forest. And so I think this view is amazing because it's like, gosh, it's just so green.
So tell people what we're looking at here.
Yeah. So we are looking straight, like heading north on Peachtree. So you can see up Midtown, and then you can see it starts to curve over the, like to my right, I forget, you can't see. So you can see all the way to Buckhead a little bit, you know, like 1 o'clock. That's going to be Kennesaw Mountain, straight due north.
7585 is right, sort of looks like it's running like underneath us almost, although it's over there because the big curve. So it's to our right is the 7585 curve there, and then it goes on up.
Yeah. And then, you know, going over here up, you know, kind of more like 11 o'clock, you can see all the way out to like Perimeter and Dunwoody and stuff. So, I mean, it's clear day today, so you literally can see, you know, the whole metro region.
Now you mentioned Perimeter. So I was at Cumberland,
yep,
which I hadn't been to, I want to say since I was a kid, but that's not true. But I was to Cumberland the other day because I went to the Apple store. And it did feel otherworldly to me because I spent so much time ITP.
Yeah.
So when you're out there pitching Atlanta, like, are you imagining everything like on and around the perimeter? Like, what's Atlanta to you?
Yeah. So we are, you know, Atlanta is a region. And I think if you look at other major, you know, like San Francisco or LA or even New York, you know, it's not just the city proper, right? You're always bigger than the city proper. The city proper is actually usually pretty limited in size. So the mega, you know, the mega cities, the mega regions are kind of owning a bit more of a regional thing. And I think that works in our favor for sure. The great thing about like Cumberland is, you know, what I'm trying to get people to kind of the lingo, I'd say I'm trying to get to change for as we kind of make, you know, usher in the newer generations is rather than looking at us as counties, you know, we tend to say Gwinnett, you know, Cotada is actually really calling out the neighborhoods. Like our neighborhoods are having like really, you know, exciting time of identity.
Right.
So, you know, rather than saying Cobb, it's like, no, that's Cumberland is the area, Smyrna, that type of thing. And I think what Choose ATL did to really try to emphasize that is our block parties that we do once a year. So we have young people host these block parties all over the metro region.
I don't think I've been invited to one.
What neighborhood do you live in?
I'm in the West End.
Well, we did have one in the West End. We had one at
Monday Night Garage? The taco place?
No, I'm forgetting now.
We only have like two restaurants, dude.
Yeah. Well,
so the West End is not West Midtown. I didn't think I would have to tell you that because you are.
It's going to come.
Most people have to. Anyways,
but what we have happened is we had these like these neighborhood like somebody kind of anchors it for that community. I know we had a West End one, and so we had 10. I mean, it's not huge. We hope one day there'll be 100, but. And then we give them a small grant of money, and they have to have an element of food, music, and art. And they all happen on the same day. at the same time, which is wonderfully fun.
So the they are they the neighborhood organizations, a specific community organizer?
They're usually like, we usually go to our kind of young leaders. So it's usually a young person that just volunteers, steps
some
up.
Some young whippersnapper?
Yeah, to organize the event. But then it's wonderfully fun because you have this window of time where all this social is going on about these neighborhood block parties coming out of Atlanta. And, you know, with social, it's like there's all this buzz even outside of Atlanta. I'm like, what's going on?
What is the difference between you and the other chamber, the one that's down next to the park?
This is that one.
This is that one. That's what I thought.
We moved locations. That building got demolished.
Don't say 10 years ago because I'll feel really bad.
No, I guess we're in like year two.
Okay, so this is what I thought. Just wanted to, but I asked because I wasn't sure. Is that surprisingly to me, when I looked on the website, because when I hear the words Chamber of Commerce, right, I think old, right? And I assume I'm not alone in that.
Yep.
And then you go look at the pictures of you and your cohorts, and it's like, those are some young, happening people. The Metro Atlanta Chamber is clearly, so you clearly had sort of rebranding thing. And I assume that happens in other cities. Like, okay, we need to hip it up or young it up. Or
I think the Metro Atlanta Chamber here has always been a little bit different because a lot of times Chamber of Commerce is just kind of stick to policy. It's usually their big charge is kind of like a networking place and, you know, really pushing policy for the business community. And what's unique about this this chamber is that it's both policy and economic development. So having those two work together, so that includes sports. It includes now what Choose ATL is charged with, which is really the talent, the workforce. And I think that makes us like a really, really powerful muscle. And, you know, our CEO, Hala Modelmag, I guess she's been here for about almost 5 years. I mean, she really deserves the credit to kind of understand that a paradigm shift is happening, understand that we need to be forward thinking, moving faster maybe than some of our competitive cities. And that's, I think, what she's led us to do.
Who are our competitive cities?
Well, I mean, it changes. I mean, it definitely changes depending on what you're competing for. So for talent, I can say certainly San Francisco, Dallas is another city that's really on the rise. Charlotte, Raleigh, kind of North Carolina hub is emerging, but still DC. We're still a big draw for the South, but even Orlando is starting to get bigger. Denver is a big competitive city.
What about Austin?
Austin, oh yeah. So interesting. How could I forget Austin? Because interestingly enough, we swap talent the most with Austin and Atlanta.
People that want to move, I want to check out Austin. People go, hey, I want to check out Atlanta.
Yeah. It's very rare that it's very rare that if when you're studying the migration of talent, it's very rare that you lose the most to one city, but then you gain the most from the same city. So we're literally in this exchange. Usually it's like, oh, we're gaining the most from New York, but we're losing the most to Austin. So, you know, it's usually a dotted kind of connect the dots like that. But in our case, we lose more leave for Austin, but we also attract the most from Austin.
And so wait a minute, what year did you come here when you started working for the Peach Bowl?
2000.
Okay, 2000. So then you've watched this change happen. I was gone for 10 years. I grew up here, then I was gone for 10 years. And it was the sort of the birth of Atlanta hip hop years, so 95 to 05. And even when I got here in 05, to me, it felt like a city like still begging for legitimacy. Like, oh man, we know we're not New York, but I sure hope people like us, like honestly. And then in these last 10 years, like everything's happened, right? Like the hip hop thing, I think, sort of kicked it off. And then everything else happened. The movie stuff coming here, like legit. Like food mecca, all the great stuff that we have has all been really fast. Would you not agree?
Yeah. Yes. And what I kind of have said is that that is going to be the new way, because it's happened fast for several reasons. It isn't unique to Atlanta that it's happened fast, but what uniquely happened in Atlanta was after the last Great Recession, Atlanta came back slower than the rest of the nation.
This is really good coffee, by the way.
Yes.
Props to your
little machine
out there.
So we were slower to come back. A lot because so much of our, you know, economy and industry is based around real estate and building things.
Right.
But when we started to come back and that pipeline started to move again, we came back really, really fast. And that is what led to, that's even what led to the Choose ATL initiative being launched in 2015, was that we were suddenly back in the game of attracting business. You know, we had a huge win with, you know, Mercedes-Benz, huge win with Porsche, like, you know, and then it's just been, you know, boom, boom, boom. I mean, we just got hot really fast, but we were not attracting the talent. We weren't really packaging ourselves and telling our story to the younger people, so they had no idea what was going on here, you know, and the perception of traffic and being in the South and all these things that are really old perceptions were still kind of haunting us. So, you know, the leadership here at the chamber came together and said, okay, we need to do something intentional about this. Like, we need to go out and make sure that we're talking directly to the talent, to the workforce that we need to either stay here, because we have all these college and university students, or the ones that we need to track here to make sure that we can fill these jobs that we've now, you know, had these companies here to grow. And that was really what led to Choose ATL being launched and developed.
And is it your brainchild, or they just put you in charge of it?
So my background is launching social impact initiatives, and they had launched it as like a marketing campaign, as like a traditional, like, you know, here's the fun advertising campaign, let's go put it banner ads and billboards everywhere. And when I was talking to them about the opportunity, didn't think it was really a fit for me. And then, you know, my mind started going, and I kind of came back and said, you know, I think you guys are really kind of thinking too small, because I think this is a paradigm shift around economic development. So I think if you spend all this money on an advertising campaign, first of all, this is the generation that's turning off advertising. But second of all, you really won't meet the long-term implications of being on the mindset of young people. And every city aspires to be on the mindset like a New York, like an LA, like a San Francisco, where there's just this romance about it and getting there. And no, it's not for everybody, but you still, even if it's not for you, you have an awareness of an identity. And, you know, Atlanta's never really had that. We had it for a short while in the 90s, like with the hip hop, but I think Atlanta it's kind of been this awkward teenager for a long time, where it's like not really sure what it wants to, you know, be when it grows up. And when I come in the mix, though, too, I love that kind of like shake up of paradigms. And so what I've really challenged, you know, the chamber to do through Choose ATL is to not look at building our identity around industry, which is really historically what cities have built their identity around, is Detroit's automobile, LA's, you know, entertainment. I mean, you could go, you know, on and on. And part of my big thesis with Choose ATL and building an identity, you know, for the next generation is that post-industrial age, it actually isn't in your favor to hang your hat on one industry.
Well, but I think that's the thing, is that you talk about, you know, the awkward teenager or the little brother syndrome is please like us even though we know we're not New York. It took us a while, but now it feels like it's F you, we're not New York, we're ATL.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, please.
Finally, yes, owning it.
Right. And really owning it,
yeah.
and something to be proud of, and not just, oh, you're from Atlanta, isn't that Deliverance, or I went there once and,
yeah,
you know.
Well, and what we're finding too in this role, it's so fun, is that, you know, there's so many people out around the world, you know, mostly the country, who are no longer here, but they still have this like wonderful love for Atlanta, right? And again, I think that just gets you closer to that kind of romance. If you have, you know, those people that are kind of out there talking about why Atlanta and talking about, you know, all the great culture that we have here and the community and just how, you know, the really just is the way I kind of talk about it, it's like the ethos of people, of a person, you know. I think the most unique thing about Atlanta is it's this, like, you know, driven, competitive city, but we don't do it at the, you know, trying to take down somebody else. You know, we do it in a very, like, collaborative, like,
right.
I'll help you, kind of you help me. Not to oversimplify it, but I think that there's way more of that here than in other major competitive markets.
Yeah, I think that's, I hadn't thought of it until you just said it, but that's actually sort of a theme of the people that I'm talking to. A lot of them know each other or have worked with. And so when they recommend people to me, they might not even necessarily be in their exact, you know, what do you call it, genre or field. But like, yeah, I know that guy because I worked in this thing. And there does seem to be this like kind of like cool us against them thing. Like, yeah, man, we're Atlanta and this is what who we are and what we do. And
yeah. And you know, a lot of what we're doing now is a kind of positioning, you know, so we've launched Thea. I don't know if you've heard anything about Thea, but that was the big thing we launched this year, which is actually like the first city-based video streaming network in the world. And obviously streaming and this whole world of over the top is, you know, the wild, wild west of entertainment and media, and everybody's jonesing for market fit. I mean, you know, there's no real like, you know, even Netflix, you know, they haven't necessarily gotten their kind of business equation down yet, right? Like they're spending to try to just buy all the content in-house and then figure out like what to do with it, you know?
Right.
So, and that's, I mean, that happened with, you know, the internet, you know, like this kind of bubble up of excitement around this new world. And what we've been able to find in Thea, like in the first year, is that we actually have found market fit in, you know, a place in an industry that still hasn't really, nothing's really settled in that way. And so we're really excited about where that's going because our market fit is discoverability. Like we are building, while it is a catalog of content of our creators, and while through their stories and through their work, we're able to power Atlanta culture and creative content around the world, what it's also saying to the next generation of content creators is come to Atlanta because you have you know, almost a discoverability platform that'll be the pipeline to the Film Fest, to the Netflix, you know, to the, you know, getting the green light to what you do. And no other city can offer that right now. So we're excited about that.
Well, this is sadly where like Creative Loafing like blew it, because like they are probably the most likely candidates to like be cool content, mm-hmm. but sadly are stuck in wherever they stuck. And so I'm excited for that. But like it's, they were like, I mean, if you grew up here, Creative Loafing was it, right? And they certainly have, like, still, even though, like, younger people aren't as familiar with it, they could have been that cool, like, edge, like, let's put out cool content. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think the hard thing, though, about those publications and those media brands that emerged, you know, prior to this OTT world is that unless you had a huge media company like a Hertz, you know, unless you're really in New York or LA, you couldn't really be powered in a major way around the world. It was maybe DC if you were kind of like a political, but so it was hard for any media brand outside of those markets to get powered because that's where you just had all the money,
right?
You know, but OTT allows you, I mean, this allows you to have a global media brand, you know.
She's holding up her phone, audio listeners.
Yeah, with like some, you know.
What do you got there, by the way? Is that the 10?
No.
What do you got?
7 plus.
Okay. It's okay. I have a 7 plus, although they just upgraded me.
I just like the plus. Now I see a regular iPhone and I'm like, God, that's so small.
Yes. But go ahead. What
you're
saying.
Does that make sense? So like,
yeah, but I'm saying there's like certain people, like it's, I don't know. I'm fascinated by sociology and by history, and like there's certain people that figure out what the next thing was, right? So Netflix would be the great example, right? While Blockbuster fucked it up, or like Eastman Kodak ruled the film world, and if they had just made this shift, which isn't that right, which seems like the most logical thing in the world, and now they don't exist anymore. Yeah. So anyway, I just watched sort of them. Anyway, I was going to ask you though.
Well, now it's getting even a bigger conglomerate. So I think everybody is really worried about media and entertainment. You know, you've got these huge mergers happening, and it's like, you know, and the reality is competitively, like, unless you have a very niche market fit, like, you're just going to have as much juice to power your content as possible because you're fighting for so much.
But here's the thing, though.
Like, with Thea, with Thea, it's like, no, do we see ourselves as competitive with Netflix? Heck no, there's no way I can compete. But at the same time, I am, because these two eyes can only go, you know, one place.
Right.
So you're either popping on Thea or you're popping on...
Right. The cream rises to the top, though. Like, history is long, not short, yeah. And the cream rises to the top. Yeah. So that's, and I say that as a guy who's been in the content game in that little niche world for 6 years, and now in this one, you know, there is like I'm not competing with other Atlanta podcasts. I'm competing with every other thing on your phone.
Right.
And you know, you convert someone to start listening, and then you keep giving them good stuff, and they'll stick around. I mean, that's pretty much right. And that's, it's kind of basic that way, but you got to be super consistent, and you've got to deliver.
Yeah.
And if you waver a little bit, then, and it's why, you know, like most podcasts last, whatever they say it is, like 7 episodes, because people go, oh, this is actual work, I'm done.
Yeah.
And people that will launch with or without funds will launch, you know, streaming services or content creators, and then they go, oh, I'm not making any money. My passion isn't I'm going to go back to work for somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just a weird kind of environment out there, you know?
So
because I also think you have younger people that are watching this boomer generation who, you know, truly were this generation that was like, you work hard, you stay committed, and you'll be able to retire comfortably, right? Like, they were kind of the first generation to truly have that whole like journey given to them, you know, because the greatest generation, the generation before them had that, you know, were at least children of the Depression, or, you know, so this was like the first generation that really could go after that carrot and have these huge houses and, you know, realize what we all thought was the American dream. And you have these young people, they've got more debt coming out of college. They're watching this older generation get the rug pulled out, at, you know, underneath them in the last, you know, quarter. And they're like, well, maybe that's not the carrot then, you know, maybe it's not this like work hard and make a ton of money and I'll be okay and I'll be happy. So I think there's a lot of that in flux too, you know.
Yeah, I was saying to somebody the other day, it used to be if you were only at a job 6 or 8 months, that was like horrible. And now people's like LinkedIn thing pops up all the time, like, congratulate so-and-so, they're on a new job. And you look and like, they just got there. There were two other jobs before that. Like, that's not important to people anymore. It's totally not. And I feel like, so my generation certainly told me, Matt, don't make waves, get a good job, get the 30-year career. And I didn't believe it.
Yep.
Right? So my generation... like with the first, I think, who started to think maybe that isn't it, but they still kind of followed it. Now the people younger than me, this is another great example. So when I was young, like, you want something done for free or cheap, get a college kid, right? Now if I have a college kid work for free for me, he's like, F you, dude, I'm going to invent an app and be a billionaire. Like, I'm not going to come work for you for nothing.
Yeah.
It's completely switched.
Yeah, it's totally switched. And I don't, you know... we'll see if that like slows down or flattens.
No, it definitely will. We're definitely in some sort of bubble of, you know, of, I mean, the amount of people who are like, I'm going to invent the next whatever.
Right.
Like, that's going to slow down some, right?
Yeah, I think that'll slow down. And I think you also, the debt is going to be coming in increasing.
I know, but listen, we just went through a banking crisis where we learned nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
So I don't think the debt thing is, like, that doesn't.
Yeah.
But the fact that people do, and I'm watching this because I talk to the young people, they do value experiences over things. And they're off traveling and doing blogs and videos and whatever. And, like, they don't need some massive house. I never needed some massive house either.
And they're bringing back like the neighborly feel, you know, so that's the other reason they're moving more to urban cores, is because they want a concentration of people around them.
But here's a question for you, young lady. how much further down the line are you looking? Because again, as a fan of sort of culture and sociology, is that we have this white flight, right? Everybody for the last 30 years is like, come back to the city. It's going to be great. And every city has their waterfront they're redoing or whatever it was, yep. right? But now it's actually happening, right? Now it's really happening. And everywhere I look on the east side of town is more work, mm-hmm. live, play, more work, live, play, more. You don't call them condos anymore. What do you call them? Town, whatever they are.
Yeah.
So where are all these people coming from that are going to fill them? And when some sort of economic slowdown happens, which it will, in 20 years, is everybody going to go like, yeah, maybe the burbs are better after all? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I try to think about. Like, so how far down the track are you looking?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't studied too much of that. I mean, you can see the projections of Atlanta growth, and they're coming. The thing that worries me more is, you know, the displacement that causes. And the reason, you know, I mean, you know, gentrification is really seen as this bad word. And there are certainly really negative connotations around it. But what is scary about cities growing right now in this, you know, age of humanity, I guess you could say, is that, you know, the pace at which business and enterprise moves is like halftime. It's only going to get faster. That's why stuff feels like it's happening so fast. These buildings are going up so fast, faster than they ever have. Deals are being made faster than they ever have. Investor, you know, all of that stuff. I mean, and tech has definitely brought like a faster pace, and that's only going to get faster. So you now have industry in a capitalistic, you know, nation that's moving faster and incentivized to move faster and faster and faster. But meanwhile, you live in a democracy that, you know, policy and infrastructure can't move any faster because the democratic process relies on you voting on things and, you know, that whole process. So the way that I look at it is kind of the wedge between those two things is getting further and further apart, making such things as displacement an even greater threat. Income mobility is, you know, an even greater, or immobility is an even greater threat. So, you know, when you look at a city like Atlanta, that the population is going to grow at the rate that it's going to grow, and we've just passed legislation for transit, we still don't even know where it's going to go, you know, that's going to take another, like, you know, 5-6 years. And meanwhile, our population is already going to have increased, you know, by like 50%. So that will be the societal dilemma of emerging cities. It's not just Atlanta. It's not just the U.S. It's all around the world.
Well, let's talk about transit because...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know, like, the...
So you can't... If there aren't tenant rights already in place
right now,
then that is going to be slower than a developer coming in and, you know, isn't it
all right? So the question that we've talked about multiple times on this show, and I've had... So I talked to Ryan Gravel, and right. I talked to...
The expert I shouldn't be talking about.
No, it's okay. I need to have him back on, and I'm not sure he will. We actually didn't agree a lot, but I thought it was a very healthy conversation. But I've talked to Ryan, and I actually just talked to Brian McGowan, who's now leaving us. And I talked to a guy at MARTA, and I've talked to a lot of people. We've had a very similar conversation. So I was on the east side, and I moved to Kirkwood in 2009 and had no idea that I was at like ground zero for this like definition of gentrification. Like that neighborhood, yes, it was 5 or 10 years past its worst days, but overnight it became what it became, right? Yep. Kirkwood on the whole east side. So now I live in the West End, right? Because I had another kid and I needed a much bigger house that I couldn't afford over there. And now I'm watching it. Now I'm at ground zero on the west side, right? So property values have tripled since I got there. And the businesses that are coming in, right? In this, so Monday Night Garage is the Lean Draft House is the only other place. That's the taco place.
Yeah.
Okay. So Lean Draft.
Did you see the little art wall that was out there?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that just happened?
Well, that happened. It happened Memorial Day weekend, but we let the wall out there.
Okay. Yeah. So I live right. That's where I live.
Yeah.
Live right down the street.
So that's the West End.
Right. Thank you. Well, right. But a lot of people don't know. Now there's okay. So Monday Night Garage is there, so a lot of people know that.
Yeah. Okay.
So the other businesses going into that this massive thing are another brewery, a distillery. So they won't make beer; they'll make liquor. The gelato place and like the hipster pickle place, right? So it's like, is that what the West End wants or needs? That's always sort of my big question.
Yep. And again, I think that we have people that have the intention to want to know, that want the time to talk and figure that out and all that great stuff. But at the end of the day, you have a capitalistic market, and if somebody comes to the table and they want that development to go up, that's happening so fast. So we have to figure out that stopgap. We have to figure out how we, you know, and it's just going to take a moral compass. I mean, that's the thing. Is there ever going to be in America a city or a municipality that says growth to us isn't just economic GDP dollars?
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, I could settle for like a decent pizza place. Like, why don't we just get one of those in there?
And I think most people would answer that, but it's like, you know, we're just a culture that, you know, is wired to want the transaction, you know, and our metrics of economic growth and development all around this country are
all right
on the transaction.
Okay, so let's talk MARTA, okay? So MARTA's always been this bad joke, basically, for what we are and compared to other cities, et cetera, et cetera. So first, Uber comes along, kind of changes the game a little bit because, like, okay, like, that helps a lot. Now we got these bleeping birds, right?
Yeah.
Which I feel like more laws are coming for that because that feels a little Wild Westy. So
I think they're brilliant.
Well, so do I. So between Uber and birds, mm-hmm. right, do we need this gazillion-dollar
yes.
transit system?
Yes. You know why we need it?
Because?
Because the reason we need transit is not for the hipster millennial. The reason we need transit is for the working class individual who's spending right now 30% of their daily wages getting to and from work because they don't have a system that gets them to and fro. So they maybe take an Uber to the transit system and then they get on the train. So, you know, our argument around transit is really about equity.
But those people have had chance after chance after chance to get trains to their house, and they'd rather sit in their effing car for an hour each way because they want to not.
They don't have cars. I'm talking about the people. I'm talking about the person that lives in the West End that works at Lenox Mall and spends 30%. Can you imagine if you spent 30% of your daily wage getting to and from work? Why go to work?
Isn't MARTA 250 one way? I'm sorry.
But they're because they're having to spend extra money on an Uber to get to the last mile.
Got it.
So
okay.
It's not working for them.
And right.
It's a major equity problem.
Got it.
Yes, it's environmental. Yes, it's, you know, a walkable, bikeable city is more sustainable and all those great things. Check the box. But the bigger concern is that it's not working for the people that really transit should work for.
Right. But that's because the people that choose not to use it don't care and have never cared. And now, so you're familiar, I'm sure, with like the Beltline Rail Now people, right?
Yeah.
Like they're all about it. And it's like, honestly, like I hate to be such a cynic, but it's like, come on, man. Like we the Beltline itself is awesome, right? And it's happening much faster than I thought. When I moved into the West End, that was all dirt, and I used to run on those trails, which I really enjoy. I like running on dirt, and boom, now it's 5 miles of concrete. But if they think the trains are coming, it's like it's not going to happen. I don't think.
Well, I also just think we need to listen to our experts. I mean, I think I've been in Ryan's shoes before as a founder. Where you've like kind of tried to go away and let it happen, and then suddenly it's not on course.
You have to talk a little bit closer.
It's not like on course to what you wanted it to be. And so you're now in this like balancing act of how you insert yourself and stay, you know, really in a valuable way. but you also, you have no rights to to be the decision maker or anything. It's a very hard path to navigate. I watch Ryan, and I think he does it amazingly, and really he does it amazingly because he's so humble about it. Like, he's very genuine in his interests here, and how we're going to build the Beltline to work for everybody, not just, you know,
hipster millennials.
Hipster millennials. As much as I'm like trying to get them to stay here and attracted here, and it's a beacon. It's a beacon for younger people too. But we can't lose that argument that it really is about the functionality of the city and no city. I mean, you look at San Francisco. You know, they, their entire economic development strategy was just fast growth, high wage tech jobs, and their bottom fell out. And now they're way too expensive. They've pushed all their culture and their artists and everything out. And I think they are the first city really of the digital era. And so everybody else kind of following suit is like watching that. And Atlanta's up next. I mean, it's, you know, the next 5 years are critical to see how we, you know, navigate this kind of tipping point of our growth. And so I think the Beltline now is a good example where people should get to know the details and understand what the argument is and not think that everything is just kind of handled at City Hall. I mean, that's, to me, that's kind of where we are in the state of that.
So what, like, what is your job every day? Like, honestly.
It's not what I've been talking about. That's what's so interesting. I'm so passionate about it. But, I mean, my job and, you know, my team is charged with, you know, the economic development talk is attracting and retaining emerging talent, emerging workforce, right? So making sure that the jobs that we have open here, especially when you have a Pandora that moves here or Mercedes-Benz that moves here.
Pandora moved here?
Yeah. They opened a second office here.
I did not know that.
Yeah. 200 jobs.
Where?
It's a huge win.
Where is it?
I don't even really know.
It's okay if you don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But I just know that they now have the jobs, so then it's my job to go out and get people to fill those jobs. But then that stretches all the way to kind of a marketing feel where I'm, you know, our team is charged with powering Atlanta's story around the world so that people know what's going on here so we can be on the mindset. So when a student graduates, they think, oh, I got to be in Atlanta.
So that's the T-shirt you're wearing, essentially, that phrase you just said. Powering Atlanta's, what did you say?
Story.
Around the world. That's
yeah.
your job.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a cool task, right? Yeah. So how does that connect with government?
Well, there's a climate, first of all, that has to be protected. Value, you know, when you are trying to have a target audience, you know, and you're, you know, I'm not trying to sell a false story. You know, we're not trying to power something that isn't true. It's got to be authentic. So if we have, you know, issues here, policy here that is, you know, not favorable to the next generation, like religious freedom, stuff like that. I mean, we also, you know, and luckily we are in the chamber, so we have a team that can help, you know, with that side of it. But, you know, you have to be a city that, you know, aligns with the values of the people that you're trying to.
So, but I'm saying, like, do you work directly with, I don't know, the mayor's office, the governor's office, senators? Like, do all these people want you to be on their good side? Do they need you? Like, what's the relationship?
Well, again, that's a bit more where I'm indirect, right? So we have a policy team that is more directly associated with those relationships, but we have a relationship because the number one, like the golden cow of economic development is not, if you build, it's not the business anymore, it's the talent. That's the biggest shift that our society has made in the past decade. So what do I mean by that? In the industrial era, if you build it, they would come. So the rise of Atlanta happened with the Coca-Cola rise and the Home Depot rise. You know, Detroit happened because you had, you know, all the car companies there, right? So there was no need. It was all just business-to-business growth. And
right.
You'd go out and you would solicit and attract business, and your economy would be ripe engine, right? It's not the truth anymore. The truth is if you cannot attract and retain the workforce in the digital era, you will die on the vine. And we're starting to even see that in some of our rural areas. So when it comes to how even what Choose ATL does for the metro Atlanta region, we're very relevant to the rest of the state because we have, you know, the rest of the state that we still need to be a powerful economic engine, you know, and a force but they've got to start to adapt to some of those newer approaches to growth.
Are there people that...
And that's innovation. That's supporting entrepreneurs. That's, you know, really allowing culture and subculture to rise up. That's standing up for values like inclusion, you know, that matter to younger people, and being out there and being visible as an attractive place to live to the next generation.
Do you have people who are disagreeing with that or frowning on what you do or make your life difficult?
I think most people... Certainly people certainly people challenge the thesis and the model that we've built, because it's never been done before. And anytime you're the first out of the gate, there's always going to be critics. I think people have caught on. The other thing was that we had to build this thing while it was already in the air, right? So it had already been launched. And that's really, really hard to do. To launch something in the public sector is one of the most challenging things, because you have no margin for error. People are watching from day one. People give you opinions from day one. If you make a mistake, you definitely know about it. But I think people have, over time, started to really understand that the change that, you know, has kind of been happening underneath us, and now it's like front and center, and that is with, you know, really millennials being the first workforce that is so much kind of in control of decision, if that makes sense.
Do you have Google alerts on yourself?
No.
Do you have Google alerts on Choose ATL?
Yeah, I don't think Choose or myself are necessarily a target to be critiqued, you know, because again, we're the brand, the platform that celebrates.
I don't even
Atlanta.
Mean critiqued. I just mean good or bad.
Yeah.
Like, do you like to, do people send you articles? I mean.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's fun to be the kind of the movement that, you know, the young people are like, I got to be a part of that. I got to be a part of that. I got to be a part of that. And that was definitely one of our big things, was that we shouldn't, that's why we launched Thea. It wasn't that we felt we should go out and create a 2-minute sizzle with an agency and have it be our creative direction. It was like, no, we should just rise up the stories that are already being created and told in Atlanta.
Right.
And then we can do that in a super innovative, actually very cost-effective way. You know, like to set up that network and to run it for a year costs less than, you know, paying for a 2-minute video.
Right.
That probably was relevant for like maybe 5 months.
Right.
You know,
I think, by the way, that's how I got to you. I think I just saw Thea, reached out on social, who should I talk to? And yeah, they said you. And I think that's how this happened, or connected me to Nicholas, who connected me to you. Yeah. I think that's how it happened.
So I the thing I probably get myself more in trouble for is like that I just am a visionary. So I can sometimes say things on the record with a mic in my hand that are like way far out. And right. It's like, no, we're not.
So
there.
who do you report to?
The CEO of the chamber.
Okay.
Kayla, yeah.
Who does she report to?
She's a board. So it's a nonprofit. So the board is, kind of really the big business leaders of Atlanta. Those are stakeholders.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do people have your job in other cities?
I think people are starting to have marketing roles in other cities. I think I'm fortunate. I've never met a direct counterpart, or I've never met somebody who has been given as much autonomy to really create what we've created here, you know? And I mean, again, that's just a lot of credit to the leadership here at the Chamber of Commerce, because they just knew somebody's got to drive forward thinking in civic, you know, work.
What is the hardest part about your job?
I think probably twofold. One, when you're a nonprofit, the hardest part is always having enough resources, whether that's human or capital, always. But I think number two is the way that we've chosen to approach this is to first have Atlantans believe and feel a part of it, rather than just trying to go out and, you know, tell Atlanta story or sell Atlanta, you know, without bringing Atlantans along with us. And that's always a little bit difficult, because you're never going to please everybody. You can't be all things to all people. You have to make choices in this direction or that direction, and what you focus on and who you partner with. And so I think that's really hard, because, you know, you want people to feel good about it, but you also have to be strategic as a business. you know, so you have to make hard decisions on who you support and who you partner with, and really be able to create. The thing that we can't have happen is, you know, with Atlanta is like, and I always kind of challenge the team with this, is like, could this be seen or heard and somebody say, is that Kansas City? Is that Cleveland? Is that Atlanta? You know, like,
right.
There's a lot of us in this middle growth area that feel and look a lot the same. And, you know, we're all kind of trying to solve that riddle for how does the city shape its identity post-industrial era? How do we do that? And Austin probably was the first to really do that well with Keep Austin Weird. They kind of started the trend of, it's not about the industry, it's really about this type of person, this ethos of person.
Right. Do you watch the television program called Atlanta?
Yes, I do.
What was your favorite episode last season?
I don't remember them like by episodes. I don't have that kind of memory bank. But yeah, I mean, it's creatively just so genius.
Effing genius,
you know?
Right?
And the reason I use that as an example is, and I know we're over, so I could talk all day. But the reason I use that show a lot, again, around just the power shift from, you know, the business to the talent, or in this case, the network to the creator. Because what I find fascinating about that show and Donald Glover is, you know, when Friends was the number one show on NBC, you better believe NBC, the network, was telling, you know, those creators when they were going to have season two, season three. You know, it was all at the call of the network. And, you know, Donald Glover and his team, you know, with Atlanta have been like, oh, we'll do season two. It'll get to you.
When we feel like it.
When we feel like it, you know? And that's what they're doing. I mean, there's so the shift to the creator, which is again why I'm so excited about Thea. I could do a whole podcast on that. But you know, when you're the creator and you're the storyteller, you know, you really it's they are the future power holders of our society. I have no doubt about it. So we want to be the home for the next big ones, whether that's in tech, music, film and video content, gaming. You know, we want to be that hub for the creator.
Right. All right. Well, listen, we always wrap up with the Atlanta favorites quiz. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes, I think so.
What is your go-to meal at the Waffle House?
I'm pretty, like, two eggs over medium, bacon, and wheat toast.
Okay. No hash browns?
Yes, I'll take hash browns.
Okay. How would you take them?
I mean, can you say anything but some other covered?
Well, I mean, the sort of standard is the Stouts, Mother and Covenant. And then you go crazy from there. Then you can add all kinds of
just
things.
Just ketchup. I mean, I put ketchup on all of that.
You are very white bread.
Yeah.
I hope that wasn't an insult. Hot sauce? No, do you live a little on the edge?
You know what? But I'll just defend. I'm just not a huge foodie person. So
okay. Well, that's
that.
That's the next question is, what is your favorite place to eat these days in Atlanta?
So I'm a person of creature of habit. So my favorite is Bookhouse Pub. I just love that place.
Okay.
I know, and it's not like, but where else? Yeah, I mean, I kind of am always, like, I mean, I love Staple House just because, you know, I know Jen and I love that story and I love the environment, but I also feel like Staple House is like for the palate kings and queens of the world. And
but you're not that. No. That's okay.
I'm more of an ambiance type of person. Yeah, I'm really bad at this food question.
It's okay. There are no wrong answers. That's the beauty of the Atlanta Favorites quiz. Okay, rank these in importance to you. We discussed this earlier. Falcons, Braves, Hawks, United.
Of importance?
If rank these in importance to you.
I can't. That's like picking your favorite child.
I have a favorite child.
I can't do that.
I have three kids, and Jackson is my favorite. I say it all the time. And he knows he's my favorite.
I
can't get political on me here.
It's not about being political. I just think that, you know, I mean, I love football. I love the Hawks. I mean, Steve Koonin's my favorite. But I love what Atlanta United's doing for this city. So I would probably, just because I'm a game, like, because I'm into the, you know, changing the game.
Right. All right. Well, okay. I'll say United. That's totally allowable. Yeah. And as much as I am sort of a quote unquote hater, I will say that I do appreciate that they are bringing us together, at least for now. Time will tell. We will see. Okay. Complete this sentence. I take Marta blank.
To sporting events.
Okay. Very common answer. To the airport is the other common answer. What is the best concert you've seen in Atlanta? Where was it? Who was it?
Best concert. I've seen a lot. Gosh, these are so hard. Well, my favorite venue is the Tabernacle. So anything I see there, I think the last concert I saw there was Beck.
Okay.
Which was amazing. And Twin Shadow opened for him. I don't know if you know those guys. Beck was, he's just like kind of phenomenal to watch. But then, you know, I also saw for the first time, saw him at the Tabernacle recently, was Zac Brown.
Okay.
And like,
you were impressed.
I was really impressed. He can really do a good live show.
Right.
I love Playhouse. So I like kind of the smaller venues. I am going to Taylor Swift on Friday night.
It's okay.
So it's my first Mercedes-Benz concert.
Right.
Well, Taylor Swift's fun. It's okay because I've been to every tour because my childhood friend, like my childhood's best, my best friend from childhood, her brother, who's also a good friend, has been Taylor's bassist like since the beginning.
Do you get backstage?
I did when it was, I did in the, like when she wasn't this big. Right. I don't anymore.
Can you name all the tours?
Yes. Fearless, Speak Now, Red, 1989, and this one.
That's very good. Yeah. I don't even know if you're right, but that's good. That's very good.
So, but then also like one of my favorite shows when I first got here, cause I grew up in Charlottesville. So I had Dave Matthews.
Right.
So I saw a good lot of DMB. Dave. Yeah. I saw a lot of Dave Matthews, but then I never had these huge venues. So when I moved to Atlanta, I was like, what is this Phillips Arena? And like, the amphitheaters and, so, you get fun shows here, whether they're like the old, like the Def Leppards, right. And the Boys to Men,
right.
Or one of the best shows I've seen in the past year, was definitely Run the Jewels, what Killer Mike has done, I think with his new duo. So they had a really good show. So anyways, I love live music. I could talk about it.
So when I was a young man, I saw, I recently found my old box of stuff. Dude, I saw every concert that came through town, 89 to 95. I saw, probably the best shows I ever saw was U2 at the Dome.
And I have not seen U2.
Oh my God. And it was the first show ever at the Dome. Rest in peace, the Dome. But anyhow, yeah. So,
well, I would say one of the coolest concert experiences I did have was at One Music Fest. 2 years ago, they did a Dungeon Family reunion. So, you had everybody from Outkast.
Yeah, I've heard actually a couple people have mentioned that as their favorite show.
Really? Yeah. That show from start to finish was just amazing.
Mind-blowing.
I think, just to have that collective of talent all together, Erica, but it was so, and I'm not even,